Hi, and welcome to episode number 9 of Light the Eye. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
We are back in studio in the Armory at CITL, Center for Innovation, Teaching, and Learning. And we are presented by the U of I Credit Union. Before we go any further, Robert, please check the surrounding space here.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have all doors closed? Is everything tidied up? The last time we did a podcast, we were in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
It had a little bit of a different look and feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we recorded an entire podcast
with an entire audience staring at an open cabinet in the background.
A kitchen cabinet.
Yes, a kitchen cabinet open, which I had opened to get a coffee cup to pour a cup of coffee just before we recorded. And, you know, I might have a bit of a struggle with closing cabinets from time to time, my wife might say, and left it open. And it's the perfect, I love it. Like, I've watched the episode a couple times, and you're just drawn to it, man. There's one cabinet door open for absolutely no reason.
Did you watch Mr. Rogers growing up?
I did.
You know, he would take something out of a drawer or a cabinet, and he would take it out and do what he would do with it for the kids on camera, and then he put everything back in its place, and he'd put it back in the drawer, back in the cabinet, and he would close the door. But this did not register with you.
No.
You learned you're special.
I learned
you have value.
100%.
Your emotions are valid.
Yes.
But you did not learn to close the cabinet door.
Nope. It's good. It's like, you know, you don't want everything perfect, right? You just want a little bit of chaos in there. I'm that chaos for us, Scott. And so, you know, what happened today? Like, tell the folks what happened today.
Well, we're starting this a little later than we were supposed to.
And why is that?
Well, this podcast is called Light the Eye.
And what's one thing you really might need if you're going to do a Light the Eye podcast?
An eye that can be lit.
Yes. And what did I do with that eye?
You left it at home.
That's right.
Thankfully, you don't live too far away.
That's right.
But you might want to remember the eye.
Yes. That might be a important part to our podcast.
There is only one eye at this moment. Maybe
Correct.
That'll change in the future. I don't know how the eye might be replicated. Because then you open a whole can of worms. Who's got the original eye? And,
yes, 100%. But this is the eye.
It traveled with you to Nashville.
It did.
You had problems with it down there.
We'll get to that later.
Yes. If you might have seen it on Robert's social media, but the eye had an anticlimactic finish to the whole day at the Music City Bowl.
That's right. But it was lit, as is the most important thing. We only light it when we win, and it was eventually lit.
All right. Coming up, what a holiday stretch of 2 weeks for Illinois athletics. We're going to dive into that. But before we go any further, first of all, thanks again to our presenting sponsor, the U of I Community Credit Union. They've been great partners, our hosts here at CITL in the Armory, and to you. We've gotten plenty of feedback and comments. We're going to get to some of that at the end of the episode where we answer a few of listener and viewer questions or comments. If you would, and you haven't yet, please like and subscribe. It helps us grow the podcast. And we ask you to do that genuinely, of course. If you like it, leave a review, rate it, all that good stuff. We really, really appreciate everybody that's been a part of the launch of this. All right, Robert, let's see if we can do this for good.
It better work better than Nashville.
You get one shot.
Once you get it, it is time to
light the eye. Two episodes ago, we did our top five moments of 2025 for Illinois athletics. We agreed on four of them and left the fifth one open, but technically 2025 wasn't over.
That's a good point.
When we recorded and we left a few days in there. We did it. I can't remember now. We recorded before Bragging Rights, I believe.
Yep.
And we certainly recorded before the Music City Bowl. Before Illinois women's basketball beat a top 10 ranked team for the first time in 11 years. And before Illinois hoops beat Missouri and Southern and Penn State. Penn State is in the new year. But all that to say is, I don't know, we may have to revise the top 25, the top five moments episode that we did a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it would be hard if we were doing it in the new year. It'd be hard to keep the Music City Bowl out of it. I mean, a last-second field goal win on December 30th, that feels like that needs to go in the top of the year. Now, also, I guess the women's game is, I guess it was January 1st. So technically,
that's
going to go in the 2026 list we do in December. So, but yeah, I mean, we also would maybe try to put 91-48 in bragging rights on there. The biggest blowout in this in the history of the series. I mean, a lot of good happened after we declared what were the top moments of 2025.
Yeah, but if you just look at this stretch that since the semester ended on campus, starting with bragging rights on December 22nd, all the way through to this past weekend, it was a good two-week run for Illinois sports. It really, really was. And I know it must warm your heart, as we had also had an episode devoted to the bragging rights in the history of that game. But not only was it the biggest margin of victory, but 43 points looked bigger to people like you, who got
9X,
a 9X over a 4X.
Yes.
Because that's obviously bigger than if it had been 86.
Right. If it, well, you know, 91-48 is a few baskets away from winning 89-51. And an 8 and a 5, you know, it looks like a blowout. A 9 and a 4 on the scoreboard, that looks like absolute destruction. And believe you me, in the last few minutes of that game, I was so nervous when that Missouri, I don't know if it was a 3 or a 2, but they got a shot in the air to possibly push it to 51 or whatever, which would have, you know, taken the 9X, 4X and made it a 9X, 5X, which is just a little bit. I love that so many people reached out to me in the immediate moments after that game just to say that. You know, a lot of people have bought into this whole idea of scores matter. And there's not much better than your walk-ons come on and somehow push it over the 90 mark, and that those walk-ons also play decent enough defense that you hold them under the 50 mark. It was a glorious capper to a great game.
Scores matter. It was scores a 43-point win no matter what.
No matter what.
The difference is 43.
But again, just think 89-51 versus 91-48. It's like two wholly different games.
But how does this score make you feel?
Exactly.
If it was 63-20, you would have been less satisfied.
Math makes maybe feel sad.
All the efforts for Illinois have rewarded them with a number 16 ranking in the AP poll that dropped at the beginning of this week on Monday. And look, polls are more for recruits, more for outside perception. Coaches want to look at the predictive numbers, offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency. Ken Pom does a great job at that on the men's side. I think Bart Torvik does a decent job with that, as I understand, on the women's side. So those are what they call the predictive measures. How will two teams match up? How do you perform compared to your average baseline team in college basketball? But still, that is a nice a number for Illinois on the ranking side. The women just missed out on the top 25 ranking. That's all right, I think. I kind of get it. I kind of don't. You just beat a top 10 team in Maryland at home, and then you gave a really good fight to a ranked Michigan State team on the road. I would have liked to see Illinois there in the rankings. I get a little bit of skepticism, and of course voters are also looking at what everybody else does.
Sure.
And how deep is every voter looking at everybody's individual games? It's totally subjective.
Yep.
At the end of the day, does Illinois women's basketball look like one of the 25 best teams in the country?
Absolutely.
I would argue yes.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, right now, Illinois is a tournament team.
Yep.
They look like a tournament team, and I think that's what matters.
Yeah, that's why the game on New Year's Day was so big, is in that a great start and 12-1 start and everything else, but there wasn't, you know, there's still quads in women's basketball too. And I believe, you know, I had somebody write this up for me on the site that there hadn't been a quad one or quad two win yet. You know, you needed that. Yes, this is a good team. And beating Maryland, yes, this is a good team. And it's crazy to start 13-2 now, but 13-1 against losing everything that they lost and four starters and 85% of the scoring or whatever. It's just crazy to turn that over so much from basically the team that Shauna Greene had coached for three full seasons, to turn to a completely new team and be at this level at this point is great, great work by her.
Well, you knew the talent level of the roster was good.
Yep.
It's just younger, but the freshmen haven't freshmened that much. They really haven't blinked that much in the midst of the tests they've been given. Even on Sunday against Michigan State, there were several moments where Michigan State was on the brink of turning it into a lopsided victory. It was at a 10-point deficit or a few more than that, as I recall. And Illinois would battle back. They'd get within a bucket. Illinois never turned the corner against Michigan State in that game. But two or three times, it was like it's put-away time for Michigan State. And the Illini brought it down into the last few possessions of the ball game. Couldn't turn the corner. But that's a very good Michigan State team.
Yep.
So I don't think there's anything to hang your head about losing to them other than it was disappointing. You would have liked the win. On Wednesday at the State Farm Center, they'll get another ranked team in Ohio State who's given so many opponents fits with that press. Illinois is now going to see their third straight pressing team, all a little bit different variety in Maryland, Michigan State, and Ohio State really presses you and tries to steal and create turnovers. But I think Illinois has handled it much better in the last two ball games than they have in years past. So it'd be a very intriguing matchup at home. And I just looked at this first set of games for the women in resuming Big Ten play. And I just thought, if you can get two out of three between Maryland, Michigan State, and Ohio State, you would take that, in my opinion.
Yep.
It's kind of interesting how it contrasts with the men's schedule. The schedule for the men in January is, quote, softer. I know that, look, it's the Big Ten. You don't take anything for granted.
Sure.
But just looking at rankings and KenPom and everything, the harder part starts at the end of January when you go to Purdue, and then into February you're going to get Michigan and all that. So the women are having to face the more challenging part right now. The men will get that a little bit later.
Yep.
But both teams are cooking. And, yes, of course, you still have a little bit here of the afterglow of the Music City Bowl, which, by the way, I know there's a lot of portal talk. We should get into that. But I wanted to, you know, just put a button here on this stretch of basketball.
Yeah. The impressive thing for the women, to me, is, you know, they have a big three, it feels like, right? You know, you have a freshman, a sophomore, and a junior that have been doing so much for you, to me. It's a Parchment, Wallace, and Dolan show. And it's really impressive what Parchment's been able to do as a freshman. I think where I'm going with this is that Shauna has changed recruiting. And when Barry Wallace signed and, you know, was in top 25 of this list and was in number 19 on that list, it was, okay, is this the best player signed to Illinois basketball in 25 years, that kind of thing. There was also a lot of hype around Parchment and Dolan, you know, a few years ago. And obviously there's more with Destiny and other, you know, coming in the future. But to have turned those recruiting results into, when you bring in exceptional recruits, you can have a sophomore like Barry Wallace who's maybe on her way to first team all conference kind of thing. When you recruit at this level, you can then immediately see these kind of results. And that's what we've been seeing so far. And it's, again, as I said earlier, it's crazy to see it when you turn over a team like this. Look, Brad Underwood had that team where he just handed it off to Io and Georgie and freshmen and brand new team. And it took a while for them to get going. This is we're turning to a brand new team and we're probably should be a top 25 team.
Well, basketball affords you that too, the nature of the game. Young players can be really, really good.
Yep.
Look at Keaton Wagler, a bit under-recruited. He looks like a one and done. And by the way, he was named Freshman of the Week for the Big Ten this week. And on the women's side, Ciara Parchment was just named Freshman of the Week. Also for the women, Barry Wallace gets an honorable mention from the Big Ten for her performance this week. But you can have freshmen
yep.
who have talent and maturity that can run your basketball team. Other sports, football, not every position, but there's spots where you just know you have to wait. And usually the starting offensive linemen are not freshmen.
Yes. And speaking of that, it's crazy. The game at Penn State, well, at Philadelphia, playing at the Palestra, the Penn State game for Illini basketball. I mean, it was a game that nobody 2 months ago would have said, all right, Keaton Wagler's going to get four fouls, and the team's going to look around and be like, well, what do we do without him? And there's going to be a lull when he hits the bench. I mean, he was, what, plus 17 in the plus minus, highest on the team. You know, he got that fourth foul early in the second. Underwood kept playing him despite two fouls in the first, and he picked up that third in the first half, and there was a lot of concern, and he didn't play that many minutes. But, you know, it's pretty crazy that we're at some point on January, you know, when's that game? January 3rd, where the true freshman goes out, and the fans and everybody else is kind of like, oh, man, oh, what do we do without Wagler in there? That's quite the testament to the true freshman star.
Yeah, one of the most mature players.
Yeah.
As a freshman that Brad Underwood has recruited.
Doesn't turn the ball over, doesn't do all the things that foul a bunch until this game. But you know, doesn't do the things that freshmen do to find themselves on the bench. Oh, kind of caught in a lull and didn't rebound and coach sent him to the bench or threw the ball away a couple times. The crowd got noisy on the road and it was too much for him. None of those things. It, you know, it's now, oh my gosh, he has three fouls. What do we do? That's about the highest compliment a freshman can get.
The men play Thursday night at home against Rutgers at the State Farm Center. I think that's a 7:30 tip if I'm remembering off the top of my head.
I don't remember, but Rutgers is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, really bad. I feel like they're going to regret.
Uncharacteristically.
Yes. I mean, I feel like Pikel's going to regret doing the one and done thing with Harper and the other kid, Bailey, last year. You know, he has two top five picks and he goes out and gets some one and dones. They don't even make the tournament. Then they leave. There's nothing left. You know, he had done so well building with guys like Paul McCahey and Caleb McConnell and all those like underrated East Coast kids that built this really tough team that gave people fits. And then because he had Harper's brother, he had the opportunity to bring in a five-star and jumped at it and also added another five-star. You know, two of the top five teams going to Rutgers, got nothing from it, missed the tournament, and now they're in terrible rebuilding shape. So it's a rough one for Rutgers this year.
Yeah, I don't know if I could question getting one and dones.
Yep.
That seems to – I don't know if that was something that backfired on him.
Yeah.
Brad Underwood had two last year.
True, yeah.
It's and true. Now looks to have at least one.
Yes.
And who knows who else from the Illini roster will be in the pro ranks after this year.
Yes.
So.
I mean, there's one who might be at Michigan right now who's going to be in the pro ranks. I mean, if we really want to look at what the 2024 recruiting class was like at Illinois, it's Johnson and it's KJ and it's Riley. And it was that's going to go down to one of the best classes in Big Ten history. I mean, you've got three certain NBA stars on there. It's crazy.
All right. Portal time for football. We've got to get into this in
yes.
just a moment. We will talk about that. Also, we'll get to some of the listener and viewer comments. We'll do all of that here on Light the Eye right after this.
As always, Light the Eye is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, who is U of I Community Credit Union. As I've said at the beginning and the middle of many of these episodes, when we went looking for a presenting sponsor, this was my first call because we wanted this to be a podcast that promotes the local, the on-campus, the orange and blue, that type of scenario. And this is a financial institution that is on campus and you know, in the same world and living in the same orange and blue environment as we live in. So thank you to them. Thank you to U of I Community Credit Union for being the sponsor. I mean, who wouldn't want to have been around Nashville in front of all those Tennessee fans throwing this around, a card with a block eye on it, in all the establishments on Broadway. So thank you to them for being orange and blue through and through. And let's keep going with the show.
So U of I football put out a cinematic recap of the Music City Bowl. Great stuff. I specifically liked what they put out the day before that, which was just audio of the coaches talking through the headsets on the final drive to set up the game-winning field goal by David Alano.
Yes.
Fascinating stuff. And we learned, we received confirmation, as you suspected, that Brett Bielema instructed the team not to score.
Yes, yes.
And thus give Tennessee the ball back. They wanted to basically get it down to an extra point type of field goal length and distance for David Alano, and they executed the whole thing perfectly. It was chef's kiss on the final moments of Luke Altmaier's career.
Yes.
But one thing that did strike me in watching the recap videos is a lot of people who are prominently featured will not be in uniform for Illinois in 2026, either because they're out of eligibility or because they're in the portal. So my question to you, Robert, is as we enter the full portal phase, are you sleeping okay with all these exits from the Illini roster? Maybe the most notable one is David Alano, who is now going to kick for Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been other notable exits, some from guys that were down the depth chart or never saw playing time, but some that really did see a significant amount of snaps. Justin Bowick, receiver who is basically the go-to red zone target, for example, comes to mind. Tomiwa Durajaye on the defensive line. Kurt Neal as well. I see a lot of nervousness out there.
Mm-hmm.
So are you okay?
First off, well, let's start with Alano. I've given this answer to several people so far. You know, somebody asked, we have a Slack channel that's part of Illini board, and someone asked me a question on the Slack channel of like, you know, I know you're closer to this than I am. How do you do this? How, you know, like, we see a guy kick a game-winning field goal and jump into the stands with his family in orange and blue, and 3 days later he's in Texas A&M gear on, you know, on social media saying, let's get it, Giga Maggies. How do you deal with that kind of quick departure and the feelings of all this? And my answer is, and it's a little unorthodox, obviously.
Is there anything that isn't?
Right. I have this thing where when I follow the team, sometimes I'm like defending the players like they're my kids, kind of. That's the vibe I give sometimes. Like if a Iowa fan goes after some Illini player, my defense mechanism is like some fan at one of my son's wrestling meets or something, like saying something about him.
You get a little mama bear?
I do. I very much do. And I've been accused of that on Twitter and this and that. And it's like, hey, man, that's a little weird. And it's like, look, just, it's how I am. It's how I look at these teams. I went to school there. They've chosen to go to school there. We're all part of one big family, and a family member is being, you know, attacked by someone, I get into defensive mode. So in that same vein, with something like this, I'm kind of excited for them. You know, as weird as that sounds.
You want them to fly, bird?
Yes.
Leave the nest?
As weird as that sounds. Look, when my son moved away from the St. Louis area to Idaho, it's 2,000 miles away from my wife and I, and that's a big deal. And as a parent, yeah, you're disappointed and like, oh, man, he's going to meet somebody out there and they're going to get married and we'll just never see him again. And there's all those parental things. But there's also this, I mean, maybe it's just a fatherly or I don't know, but like I had this emotion of like, man, I can't wait for him to write his story, right? I can't wait for him to get out there and write his own story and tell his own tale and live his own life. And when I can see him, I can see him, but you raise kids because you want them to have those moments. And that's my emotion toward David Alano Texas A&M kicker, that I'll be excited to tune into a Texas A&M game. Look, I'm certain that they have other NIL opportunities, like actual NIL opportunities of the local coffee shop wants somebody to promote them and such and such brand.
When you need your morning kick.
Yes, exactly.
Go to.
There are 10 times more opportunities like that, unfortunately.
Coffee.
Yes. In those scenarios, they have those things that maybe don't exist in Champaign for players further down the roster, because the guys at the top of the roster are doing the, you know, local TV ads and all the stuff that it's just a different level in a town like College Station and everything else. And so if he has that opportunity, you know, say he never kicks in the NFL and he has an opportunity to make a decent amount of money doing these type of NIL things in College Station, more power to him. That's kind of how I feel. It's thank you for the USC field goal. Look, we saw last night that the kicker for the Ravens, with an opportunity of, if I make this kick, my team is in the playoffs. If I miss this kick, the other team is in the playoffs. And he missed it. And an entire city is downcast.
And by the way, all those players miss out on playoff checks.
Yes. And
because he missed it.
Yes. And this could have been the story for both the USC game this year and the bowl game. If he's just a little left or a little right, that would have been the story of, oh man, had the chance to beat USC, didn't take it. Had the chance to beat Tennessee, didn't take it. Both kicks were, goes in, it's we win, misses, we lose, and he made both. So I owe him a debt of gratitude, and I said that to his dad and his brother when they were tailgating with us at Purdue in the next game, and you know, kicked five field goals that game to make it a what might have been a little closer, just make it a comfortable game. And now he's off, and that's that. So that's my first answer to this, which is I feel maybe differently than a lot of fans do toward this kind of thing. It's hard to process. It's hard to deal with. Like, he was just wearing orange and blue 6 days ago. I still have that feeling of, like, go make us proud, even though it's at another college. It's strange.
Yeah. I think there's two different emotions that the fans experience. Maybe three. One is what you just mentioned, like, wow, you were just doing this and now you're doing that. And this is just, that's kind of tough. There's another level of kind of anger.
Sure.
That comes out. And I don't have a whole lot for you if you're in that space.
You owe me kind of thing. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Two things can be true at once.
Mm-hmm.
David Alano did a great job at Illinois as a kicker. He will, as he said, always have a piece of Illinois with him wherever he goes. And he can also go be a good kicker somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean he hates or has abandoned or is a traitor to one school.
Right.
But I think that crowd is maybe louder sometimes in the social media sphere, but isn't as big as you might think just because of how their volume. But there's the other side which goes, wow, that he was here and then he was gone.
Yep.
And this is just really rattling me.
Yep.
Then there is whenever you see people getting in the portal, there is the angst that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you going to do at a kicker?
Yep.
What are you going to do at this position? Well, why are these people leaving? Is there something wrong?
Right.
Are the coaches too mean? Is NIL too small? Was that guy really good, but the coaches don't understand that he's really good and they're not playing him enough? What is the problem? Why would players leave? And my answer to that is there are now thousands of football players in the portal. This is what's going on.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm not in those rooms, in those discussions, of course, but I would just say there is a side to it where everybody is trying to do the same thing, get the best roster and win.
Yes. And I always look at it, I've said this several times, the player that changed my view toward all of this is Marcus Damask on the basketball team. Because look, when the portal opened up and when
he's not a place kicker.
Right. When Damask arrived, my ability to go from who is Marcus Damask to I would take a bullet for Marcus Damask happened so quickly. You know, we all had that concern that there was this Like, I'm not even going to know the team each year. Like, I grew up because Bruce Douglas was there for 4 years, and I followed his entire career, and I had his, you know, a shirt with Bruce Douglas on it and Ephraim Winters, and they're just there year after year after year, and you build it up. Well, what am I supposed to do with a new team this year and then a new team next year? And for whatever reason, Damask was the player of, like, wow, this happened quickly. Like, the Damask family is so embraced by Illini Nation and Illini fans, and just even seeing his dad going around Boston that year at the you know, Sweet 16 and before the Elite Eight game and everything else. You know, the Damask family are the conquering heroes entering the bar and all this stuff. And it happened so quickly that it just shifted my brain toward, like, yeah, I feel like maybe I can embrace the new fairly quickly if they are wearing orange and blue. And I've just kind of stayed in that spot since of, look, I took to Will Riley and KJ immediately, and I took to Luke Altmyer immediately when he transferred in, and I've just taken this new, like, well, let's see what we're unwrapping under the tree here during portal season as a different way. Yes, when people used to announce they were leaving or transferring 5, 8, 10 years ago, it was a big, like, well, now what? The freshmen aren't ready, and what do we do, and this and that. And now it's more of a, hey, well, we were sitting here prepping for this. The starting center from Wisconsin showed up on the Illinois portal list. And it's just kind of a, you wait and you see, and then you get to spring ball and you evaluate. And as I wrote and we've talked about here, it's kind of like unwrapping presents. It's kind of like, yes, I'm going to be sad to see some of these guys go. And yes, I thought Durajaye would be a starter and the leader of the defensive line, but he's apparently chosen the mercenary path. He will be at his fifth school in 5 years next year. He redshirted 1 year and then did 1 year, 1 year, 1 year, and now he'll do 1 year. And some players, more power to them. That's how they want to do their college careers, and that's fine. And I feel like Illinois fans can trust this staff to go out and find replacements and figure out how they want to do it next year. So it's different than I thought it would be, but I'm at the same level of when you trust the staff, you just be kind of exciting to see what these new guys are once spring ball gets here.
Jake Renfro is the center that you're referring to, played for Wisconsin, seventh year senior. So I'm looking forward to understanding his path a little bit more. But you contrast him with, assuming obviously that he's the starting center, which sure, I presume he's being brought in to do, and you know, yep, he's healthy and all that. But you compare him with Josh Kreutz, who just left after a loyal five-year career at, mm-hmm, at Illinois, and being the guy for several seasons on the offensive line. If Illinois is having success next year offensively, you're going to appreciate Jake Rent.
Yeah, and it's the Damask thing. It is from who is that guy to next November when he's walking off the field carrying a trophy from the, you know, carrying the hat, and it's a kid who grew up in Illinois and he gets to play for Illinois in his final season. I will embrace every ounce of that story. So it I have found personally for me, I know some people have taken a step back from college athletics because of all this, because of what's missing. But for me, I've just found this, if they are wearing orange and blue, it's not the old Seinfeld bit. This is not that.
We're all rooting for laundry.
Yes. But, you know, if they are wearing orange and blue, I am in immediately. And then when they stop wearing orange and blue and they go off to Texas A&M, I kind of still pull for them to do us proud out there. So,
but Illinois against Texas A&M in the national championship a year from now.
You better miss that.
We know where your lines are drawn.
100%.
We maybe buried the lead. Illinois apparently has, well, I don't know how I want to frame this.
Yes.
A quarterback, mm-hmm, is officially on the roster now for 2026. Caton Hauser, coming from East Carolina University. He was a Pirate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to be a Pirate. Did you put that out there?
Yes, that would be a great tweet for him, yes, to have put out.
But I don't want to be a Pirate anymore. Anyway, he's going
probably
to,
a little too young for that, Robert.
Yeah, well, anyway, Illinois has what on the roster? Carson Boyd, who did not play last year, who will be a sophomore, an incoming highly touted quarterback, freshman Michael Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, now Caden Hauser. I'm just a little bit rankled that now Barry Hauser gets the guy with the same last name.
You had the Beatty thing.
And I had a Hank Beatty thing. Years. We weren't related, but I had a Beatty, and now Barry Hauser gets...
Max Rosenthal.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I had Max Rosenthal for 2 full years, and then he was on the coaching staff for 2 years. So I had 4 years of Max Rosenthal.
I will say this. It all stays in the band this way.
Yes.
Hauser, band.
Uh-huh.
That's very good.
Yes.
But I think the bigger question is, who's Illinois' starting quarterback? And we're sitting here on January 5th of 2026, and we need to know.
Yes.
Who's the starting quarterback?
Yes. It's interesting how, you know, Ethan Hampton was brought in from Northern Illinois to be the backup this year in case
he's gone into the portal.
And now he's gone into the portal as of today. And, you know, he was going to sit out a year and then be the starting quarterback. And then they find Hauser. And so he goes and looks for a better spot for his final year of college. So it's crazy how quickly it happens. It's crazy how, you know, it's impossible to evaluate sitting down, making a chart to write about this stuff. And, you know, and then suddenly the two guys I have in starting positions on the defensive line, Durajaye and Conan, both enter the portal, and it's like, okay, well, now we got to pivot to all this. So it's impossible to follow minute by minute and this and that. But I think we do know that with Altmaier graduating, they wanted someone to compete with Carson Boyd and the incoming freshman Michael Clayton, and that guy is Hauser. So I think spring ball, as we now know, since Clayton is enrolling early, you have Boyd, Petty transferred, so you have Boyd, you have Hauser, you have Michael Clayton enrolling early, you have Shawnee Newton still here, and from those four, you're going to send them out there and come out of spring ball with a presumptive starter for the fall.
Ooh, good old-fashioned QB competition. Haven't had one of those in a while.
That's right. I think, personally, that Coach Bielma should open up every practice, all minutes of every practice, so that certain bloggers who obsess over this stuff can stare at the competition for 3 weeks in the spring and then write about it. That's my vote.
I would vote for that as well. If we had Bielma back on the program again, he might have an overriding vote on that.
Yes, they might not want some of their new offensive stuff to be seen by anyone, but just let me. Why not just let old Robert sit over there in the stands? I'll even sit up in the balcony in my seat.
Who loves your players?
Record anything.
He loves your players like sons.
He wants to watch the practice like his kids are out there. Why would you keep me from my kids?
No coach wants the parents of the kids.
That's
in
a great
present,
point.
In the
That's
practice.
A great, great point. I'm going to have to rethink this appeal once I give it to him.
All right. Before we head to our final segment, I want to give a shout out to the voice of the Illini, Brian Barnhart, who was named today Illinois Sportscaster of the Year by the National Sports and Media Association. As I've shared a little bit on this podcast and in other places, Brian's somebody I reached out to when I was just trying to figure out how to get into the whole world of sports broadcasting, especially play-by-play and sports media. Couldn't have been kinder. And then I've had the privilege of working alongside him at the radio station at WDWS and in football and basketball, the booth and the scorer's table with him. We've shared some baseball broadcasts together as well. So Brian Barnhart has not only gotten to call some very cool stuff, he's done it remarkably well. Congratulations to you, Brian. You won this back in 2008. You get it again. It's well-deserved. And I'm glad that folks across the state, where most of the media attention goes on the city of Chicago and the market up there, are recognizing what a fine job you do. So congrats to him. He'll get the award handed to him in the summertime out in North Carolina. When we come back, we will respond a little bit to some listener comments and questions and learn what happened or didn't happen when Robert tried to light the eye in Nashville. Appreciate all the feedback we've been getting, and if you would like to leave a comment, if you're on the YouTube comments, or you can email us. That's a very old-fashioned way to get in touch with us, lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com. That's lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com. We appreciate listener and viewer feedback. All right. A few weeks ago, we had our best moments of 2025. We agreed on our top four moments of the calendar year for Illinois athletics, which was the the USC football win, the women's basketball victory in the NCAA tournament, Lucas Byrd winning a national championship, and golf, men's golf, hosting the NCAA regional at Atkins Golf Club. We left the fifth one open to a variety of options.
Did we settle on the regional? I feel like it was a different one, wasn't it?
Oh, no, you're right. We did not settle on
that. Yes, that was one of the ones
we settled on soccer.
Yes.
Soccer.
Women's soccer.
Winning in the Big Ten tournament.
Yes.
And making an NCAA tournament.
And then we had golf on the list of which should be fifth.
Fair enough. All right.
Yes.
Thank you for correcting my memory.
Sure.
A couple of other suggestions from comments. Ellen, I'm going to go with Ellen McMillan or Elan McMillan, says that KJ and Riley, Will Riley, going back to back in the first round was a huge moment for Illinois athletics, the 2 1-and-dones.
Really is.
Yeah, first time.
First time ever having a 1-and-done, and then the second 1-and-done came in the next pick.
Yep.
Yep.
JD Live says 2 first-round draft choices might be bigger than the NCAA win as a hoops story, and 3 wins for Illinois players on the PGA Tour.
Ah, I knew JDL would come up with, he's the Illini golf nut, and so I knew he'd come up with something golf. But yes, that was big. I mean, that's like,
I could. Wasn't truly an Illini moment in an Illini competition, but
yes,
I very notable.
Yes, the single biggest year on the PGA Tour for Illini golf ever, including anything Steve Stricker ever did, or anything that DA Points ever did, or anything else. The single biggest year on the PGA Tour.
Alan says a big moment was Luke Altmaier staying at Illinois instead of going to Tennessee for the bigger money. Was. Yeah, I guess one thing didn't happen without the other.
No, absolutely. And then for him to get to beat Tennessee.
Yes.
And getting to kind of have literal last laugh with getting them to jump off sides to make 3rd and 6 into 3rd and 1, which was very manageable, and Fagan picked it up, and then you take a knee, and he's like falling over laughing out loud on the field that he got Tennessee to jump. That was a very, very big moment for Illinois football.
And if you paid attention to that social media video they put out, I mean, Barry Lunny, it was in the plan. Like, if they don't jump, here's the play, but we want them to jump. It was entirely what they were trying to do.
Yes. When people saw that, I think I said this in our postgame, when people saw his immediate reaction, some people thought, oh, Altmaier thought one of his players jumped, and his reaction of throwing up his hands was like, oh, why are we having a false start right here? But no, he was laughing out loud of like, they fell for it. You know, like that essentially ended the game, because it was 3rd and 5.5, which means that meant they would move to 3rd and 1/2 foot and or 1/2 yard. And that's that. You're going to pick that up. And they did easily pick that up, especially that late in the game with the defensive line really tired. So it was really, really funny to see him get one final laugh at the team who tried to pull him away and then put him away with a field goal.
Illini Greg in Green Bay asks this question.
Okay.
How is watching this version of Bielma ball different than Zook ball to close out ball games?
Well, I'm going to get the stat wrong. But I believe
it. But it's not going to stop you from saying.
No, it will. Yes. I believe it was something like 3 consecutive years where Illinois did not have. No, 5 consecutive years where Illinois did not have a 4th quarter comeback. If at any point Illinois was losing in the 4th quarter, any point during the 4th quarter, Illinois was trailing, Illinois lost the game under Zook for like. It might have gone over into the first year of Beckman. I can't remember. I'm just pulling this off the top of my head. But there were no 4th quarter comebacks. None. Like zero. If the other team took the lead in the 4th quarter, ball game, it's over. I don't think it went away until that run. Maybe it went until like 2014 when they came back from like five fourth quarter deficits and came all the way back. But that was the tellingness of, like, the little things. We know this, right? The little things under Ron Zook did just not happen. The little things that make a difference in the game, the special teams, this and that, the bad turnover, the terrible penalty, all seem to continue to cost Illinois and cost Illinois. And now this year, Illinois top 10 in least penalties called across the country. They were number 12 going to the bowl game, and I believe they're number 9 now. We still have a few postseason games left, but I believe Illinois, in part, average penalties called per game is like 9th nationally. And those are the things that make a difference. Look, how could have that fourth quarter drive, that 5-minute drive to win the game, how could it have been different? A false start here, a really bad 15-yard personal foul because there was some shoving after a play and suddenly that drive falls apart. All of the things, a turnover of anything that we saw, that Ron Zook had great athletes and solid coaches and we saw what they could do in the Rose Bowl season. But we also saw the lack of discipline hurt them so many times, and we also saw very few fourth quarter comebacks. And this is the opposite now. You see over and over fourth quarter comebacks and discipline over mistakes, and the little things mattering in close games.
I would also add just a clear plan from the coaches on how to go about late game situations.
Yep.
Every coach, including Ron Zook, had their strengths. One of Bielma's strengths is knowing how to win in the margins. All the things that you just said, plus clock management and game management at the end of halves, at the end of the fourth quarter. And he works, he and Lunny and Ben Miller, and it looks like Mike New was in there too, yep, all are in sync. They've rehearsed it. They've planned for it. They knew exactly what they needed to do when Illinois got the ball with whatever it was, about 5 minutes left in that last drive, and they've done it over and over again. You got the right players who have to go out there and execute it, of course, but it just seemed like we're not rolling dice around here. We know what we want to do and how we want to do it, and most of the time it's worked for them.
And they practice it and practice it and practice it. People ask me, what's like the biggest difference of a Bielma practice versus Zook or Beckman or Lovey or whoever? And the biggest difference, hands down, is situational football, meaning they'll say, we're practicing second downs today, or we're practicing this third, or we're practicing extended red zone from like the 20 to the 40. We're working on specifically on those plays of, we're trying to get into field goal range, we're trying to get into the end zone. What do we call on these downs? What do we call when it's these situations? And they'll run a 3rd and 7 from the 26, and they believe a 3rd and 7 from the 26 is a wholly different kind of football than a 3rd and 7 from your own 42. And they just practice that and practice that and practice that and work situations and scenarios. Where are you on the field? What kind of plays we call? What kind of sets we do? All that kind of stuff. And then we see it come out in these moments. That those situations they are ready for because they have practiced those. It's not that Zook teams like didn't practice 2-minute drill or whatever. It's just that they have gone through so much of, when you're on this position in the field and it's this down in distance, here is the kind of thing we're looking for. And there's more risk when you're here and there's less risk when you're backed up to the 10 and all of that, to where the players have practiced it starting way early in spring and they know exactly what's going to happen in those scenarios.
All right, before we go, we teased it at the outset. Back in Nashville, well, we light the eye. We call it light the eye because, yes, you and your tribe,
yes,
your cohort, your peeps,
yes,
have a little tradition where you light this LED light that is sitting here with us after, yes, football wins.
And only after wins.
And only after
it hangs
wins
on top of the fire engine. And if
it's your
we
own little
lose,
version of flip the capes at the marching line, I do.
Yes. It is the when we lost to Minnesota at home in 2024, when we lost to Ohio State at home this year at the post-game tailgate, this thing was just hanging there, unlit.
Mm-hmm.
Taunting us in its lack of brilliance. And reminding us that our team had not won. And when we do win, I take this on road games, and I had it with me at the Duke game, and I had it with me in Purdue and everything else, and we always light the eye on the road, including at the Citrus Bowl, and we lit it again. I try to park near a tree. Look, it's best if this thing can hang from somewhere, right? And if I don't have the fire engine with me, it's got to hang from something. Why not a tree? So I parked near the stadium in the media lot near a tree, and we went out there to light the eye. And I believe we have the video of this, which we can do it. You'll get to
that's
hear.
That's an effect.
These are all the comments of people. But you'll understand. We'll just watch this. You'll understand. I had a little. Somebody makes a Chevy Chase reference here, and it was very Christmas Vacation that I couldn't get it lit. So here we go. They're practicing the song. A little Richard Strauss.
There we go.
Scott, the name of the music. Get it right. Speak your German.
Also Sprach Zarathustra.
Yes. From 2001 Space Odyssey. HAL, based, a computer based at the University of?
Illinois.
Thank you. Okay. Countdown. So here I am calling for the countdown, right?
Start after the second. Countdown's over there.
After the second. Always starts right here at the second. Papa. Start the countdown. Robert. Show started right. Here we go. I have this remote with me. There we go. It's going to happen. Got a whole crowd of people. I put it on Twitter. I told them, come watch us light the eye. Here we are. Hit it, Robert. Nothing happened.
It is Chevy Chase.
It is Chevy Chase, says someone. It's just straight up the Chevy Chase in the front yard kicking the Rudolph. So I finally realized I had to point it at a different part. Please light. I scream at it.
Turn on! Yeah!
There we go.
And
Navy for Nashville.
That wasn't planned, though, was it?
What's that?
The Navy color?
No, because... So I don't know if people can see this.
Yeah, zoom in on that.
Yes, we have the little circle here. Oh yeah, we can. There we go. We have a little circle here that could be any light. So let's just do it right now. We could go to Navy for Nashville, or we could even go to some kind of red, pink, magenta. We could do a green eye. We've got all the colors of the spectrum, and so we did. You know, I was messing with this thing, like, why won't it light and this and that? And for whatever reason, I guess I had shoved the color into the blue frame, and so it came on as Navy for Nashville. Let's just leave the Navy up for now. Let's just leave it up. Wasn't that exciting, Scott?
One more time. That was so exciting.
Yes.
To hear about your anticlimactic failure to light the eye.
Yes, but it lit, and we got to cheer, and all these people waiting for the buses over by the Tennessee area were like staring at us like we were crazy. But then they had to look at that thing shining a bright eye among the skyline of Nashville.
Next time on the podcast, we may have one or two very special guests for you. So stick around for that. There's a lot of Illini athletics coming your way in addition to the basketball teams that are in action in Big Ten play. We've got some of the other winter sports and spring sports on the horizon also. Thanks to Kevin Southworth for his fine work as our producer today. We'll talk to you again until next time when we light the eye.